Good morning, or I should rather say good afternoon, or almost good afternoon. Many apologies for having kept so many of you waiting here. I think the reason for the wait may be mildly understandable. I think we were not prepared to come here at the time we had expected to come here in the morning, especially for, I think, Sebastian and Peter, who are coming here for the first time in their lives. They've actually had a very interesting morning. We managed quite by accident to go to the ashram and the samadhi in the morning, and after that to Golkond, and after that to Matri Mandir, which I think has been an unexpected experience with the few delays in between. So thank you so much for the patience. Do you want to say something about how you felt now was yesterday?
I think from my point of view, I feel embarrassed at being here last night without having had the experience of this morning, and I now feel difficult, actually, about it, because I had a profound lack of understanding when I came here. I don't think you could have any understanding unless you've had the morning we've had. You know, one has a much more profound understanding, and therefore I would like to revisit everything I said last night. but maybe now is the opportunity.
Yeah, I just echo Peter's comments. It's overwhelming. That's how I feel.
So I guess, I mean, this was meant to be a very open and frank question and answer session. I guess people have many questions from yesterday and from many years of life experience, and we thought it might be interesting to share something so we can maybe reflect back on the little things that we can from the outside on what may be happening within Auroville. And I think the key thing would be frankness. Auroville is known for its frankness sometimes, but I'm also surprised at the shyness of some people. So this might be the opportunity to be quite open and frank. We have enough mics here. Great, good. So let's... Actually, I don't think we're experts at all. And I think the morning and our delay speaks to that state of...
Are you expert in delays?
Probably doing the right thing at the right time. And we've got nothing to do with that. So, I mean, whichever way you'd like to take it, whoever would like to start, let's open up a conversation.
Ajit. Why don't you start? You had already...
I don't know if that is really
even
the
before the event,
question.
You had circulated a question, so why don't we start with you?
I have another suggestion. Someone had asked yesterday that if they have questions to ask of the...
Yes, yes. Yeah. You would like to start with that?
I think Sebastian has a very interesting question.
Sebastian.
Oh, you're getting back to my... I was wondering about the connection between what's happening to the physical and especially the ecological aspects of this entire site and the spiritual path that people are on and the spiritual philosophy and the extent to which those are being mirrored. I see fabulous examples of ecological engineering and of regeneration, both. And these are things that are desperately needed all over the world, more and more, and there's stories to be told here for sure. But I'm thinking is there a more direct connection in your minds between what's happening to the earth here and the intended spiritual growth and spiritual development or evolution that's happening at the community level? How do those two things fit together, and particularly for someone like me looking at engineering and planning solutions, what do I need to be aware of before I suggest solutions? So it's not a simple question. Yeah.
Everything that we do here is spiritual.
Nita, just take it. I was wondering.
Everything that we do here is part of our spiritual life. So there is no separation. There's no separation between the green work. I mean, anybody who's doing green work is doing it as part of their yoga. I mean, their spiritual life. So in Auroville, and that's what integral yoga is all about. It's, you know. So our work, so we have karma yoga, and lots of people in Auroville talk about karma yoga, and that's through work, yoga of action. But integral yoga is joining all of them together, and Auroville is our field of action. So there is absolutely no separation between what we are. You know, we're all on the path. So I would say that's the everything. This is a reason for existence. So Auroville is just the sort of external manifestation of that for all of us.
That's the idea.
That's what it is. Anybody else from Auroville would like to? Satpriyam?
Thank you. On my side, I work with raw earth, mostly stabilized earth. And I would say that earth has a special consciousness. In fact, everything's consciousness, every atom of matter. And the earth has a very special consciousness, I would say, among other materials. And when you want to work with it, you have to be in contact with this consciousness. And this, in a way, helps you to develop yours. And on the other side, helps the earth to develop its own consciousness. That's why I can do sometimes things with earth nobody can do, because I have certain contact with this material.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, yeah, of course, yes. My name is, I'm Satpriyam Maini, because there is another Satpriyam who was in Ashram long ago. So Satpriyam Maini, I'm an architect, representative for Asia of the UNESCO Chair of Architecture. And I have been working in 29 countries, among them 12 in Africa, and doing different things here and all over the world. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I just have a follow-up. I'm still genuinely trying to understand that, and it sounds beautiful, but I'm wondering, when the Earth has a consciousness, is that something that expresses itself as you work on it? Is it an emergent idea of this site, of where it wants to go, that you're kind of tapping into as you get to know it better? Is there some kind of a creative force that's happening between the Earth and the people here that is truly generating something new and unexpected? This is an abstract start to our conversation, but I'm still trying to understand what you're saying about consciousness and the earth and so forth.
It's more kind of, I would say, a very intimate relationship with the material. Especially, like you say, it's kind of creative force, and all people who are doing some works in the forest and for the land, conservation and so on, it's part of the same, I would say, the same spirit and the same endeavor. It's quite difficult to express it, in fact, and I would say for me, it's more to touch material, to feel what I have in the hand, what I can do of it. Like, I don't say that the soul speaks to me, but I try to catch what I can do with this material that I have in my hand, because souls are almost as different, as much as different as all the human beings on the planet. And that means you have to really see, okay, this is 2 meters different, the soul will be slightly different. And then I have to catch what is this and what I can do with this soul. Sometimes I miss it, sometimes I can succeed. And this is kind of a special relationship that I try to develop with the material, and that I try to teach to my students, because we're also a research and development center for earth architecture and training center, and we have trained more than 6,000 people from 62 countries. And but to speak of the link with the consciousness of the material is quite difficult, in fact. So, but there is one, and I have worked with many materials like steel, wood, stone, and others. And the earth has really a special consciousness, really special one. And the mother said that the earth, as a planet, has a soul, a psychic being, like we say.
Yes. If I may paraphrase what Sebastian was saying in more mundane terms, as I understood it, in plain English, if I may. We do understand the ultimate goal that the community wants to go to, and here I'm purely talking as a practitioner. So if I were to call this transition between the profane and the sacred, is there, as it were, a roadmap, a specific guideline? It may not be so much in terms of rules, but in terms of the physical roadmap, that this is where we are and this is where we need to go, not just in spiritual terms, but how does it get expressed as the city form, the community, the sustainability? I mean, what is there a specific roadmap that one can talk about?
Well, in a sense, Mohan has overlapped the question that struck me, which is that, yes, the Earth has a special consciousness, and it's very difficult to talk about it, Satprem. I so totally agree with you. And I want to ask the same question also of the other materials. Does the water have similar consciousness? It has a very different material. It has its own volatility, its own dynamism. And surely that also has its own consciousness, and then the air and so on. So all anybody who would like to give us views on that, it would be very interesting.
There's a bill behind. Let me come back to you. Okay.
So I would like to go back to the original question, and as many people like you are new, probably you are not aware that the mother expected the town to be built within 5 years with systems engineering. And for this, the Ford Foundation was approached, and a preliminary plan funded by the Ford Foundation was to come up. And when the mother submitted this request to the Ford Foundation, the concept was first to build the town, and the mother then would have personally selected inhabitants. And this, by the way, is also what happened in Yao. As long as the mother was in the body, the application was submitted personally to the mother, and she would select the people preferably among those who had the expertise or the will to come and build the town. So the preference was, of course, for technician, architects, engineer, anyone willing one way or another helping to manifest the town. But beside the fact that it was a futuristic town, and even the concept of Matrimandir, it has been altered, but originally it was in fact a purely high-tech structure. But that was 1970, when the mother could understand what high-tech was, because high-tech still hardly existed. So at the same time, the inhabitants should have been living here according to the minimum needs. And in the original concept of the town, the smaller the space occupied by the inhabitants, the closer they would have been living to Matrimandir. I also want to say, regarding Satprem, that I've been living for the past 10 years in a complex that he has built and is the only complex in Auroville which got an international award, beside many more awards. And Satprem is maybe the only one who has been living according to the mother's ideals. In Vikas, where I lived, he lived in a small room. Then he wanted to trade a small room with a small room in the basement. And finally, doesn't even have that. He lives, he has just a room where he works in his working place. The community was founded ideally as mother wanted Auroville without servant. Everybody was doing his own work, including garden work. And very often you would have found Satprem doing this kind of work. And even now you find him, if you go on the construction site, you will find him with dirty, with red soil and so on, because he works together with the other one. So this is the original concept of the mother.
Thank you, Paul.
Just a question, please. I just want to say one.
Ask for a certificate, but anyway. Because the only building in Auroville.
Yes.
Yes, in fact, the only international award that we got in Auroville is for the visitor center that we built with the Serhassini, which is there. And for Vikas, it was a finalist for the World Habitat Award in 2000. We did not get it for a few seats, but we're in the first 10. That's all. Thank you.
I'd like to close a philosophical loop here. Mohan asked about the sacred and the profane, and I think it's a very slippery road to go towards. The earth has its consciousness, and Satprem is in touch with it, with his hands. But the cement too, and the water too, and people work with wood, and people work with plastic, and people work with metal. So it is not about what here is profane and sacred, but the question Mohan asked, what is the roadmap? The mother gave lots of suggestions and guidelines, but she definitely did not give a roadmap. She says, we don't know. She didn't know, no one knows. So the roadmap is our lives. And our trials and errors and our clashes and harmonization efforts are part of that roadmap, and there is nothing else. So it is actually a constant state of limbo. As it is that, I come back to what Mita said, the essence of the yoga, of the spirituality here is to surrender this life to a higher purpose. Now you call it Auroville, you call it human unity, you call it the divine. This is again up to every individual. But it is definitely a much larger purpose we are supposed to surrender to and try to find it through that surrender. And there is no other roadway, no other road to go there.
Well, Lukas, I would say there is a roadmap. There are several that the mother has given. Especially the charter. We start with the charter, and it says that Auroville belongs to humanity. That gives you some clues, and actually this land does legally belong to humanity because the Parliament of India declared the Charter of Auroville to be a legal document. So actually this is a very special place, and this red soil that Sat Prem has worked so well with and has taught us so much about is something that is integral to this place. And all these other things, and Lukas has got his hands in the garbage, which is a wonderful thing, and I feel that the garbage is sacred, and we're starting to use waste materials to build with instead of this reinforced concrete. And it's important that we, Auroville, understand some of these things that are happening in the West, which you guys are very familiar with, namely like zero waste. Auroville has to get to zero waste. We're doing landfill. We're dumping, 100 kilos into the ground every day. So we can't do that. That we have to change. So these are things that we need to work on, and that's why I'm so happy that you guys have come to give us a push in that direction, because it seems to me that we're doing too much conventional building here, and we have to innovate more.
My view is a little bit, I would not be too idealistic or optimistic, but to answer Sebastian's questions, we have to look at Auroville from a larger movement of humanity, that humanity is evolving. And it's growing slowly by slowly, discovering new light, new ideas, new possibilities. And in process of this, this particular individual called Mother and Sri Aurobindo, they gave some ideas, some vision of human life, future possibilities. And all these ideas have entered into what we call a mental level. It has entered into the thought system of humanity, the humanity which lives here and those who are associated with Auroville. They accept these ideas as a principle that yes, world is one, everything is consciousness. We have to grow and find our inner center. All these ideas which many people say is ideas of the future, and these have entered into the mental level, but at life level, at the day-to-day level, it depends on each person's individually. For some, it has percolated down more. For some other, it is absolutely nothing. They are still interested in the same old structure of life. We see that in Auroville also. So Auroville is a very complex. You cannot say the Auroville is something high. Some are following the ideas and they have brought down to mental level. Sat Prem can say he can brought down to physical level, but for some other it is just mental, for some other it is not even mental. They are just here by chance. My family came here, so I came here. So it's a very complex situation. We cannot. But one thing, one American professor, a thinker, Edwin Thompson, somebody from England invited him to give a lecture on a new future, new age. And he said that if Auroville develops fully, in England he said, if it develops into a universal township, the ideas of Auroville will be universalized. And then humanity will be a slightly at higher equilibrium. This is a very great insight. We have to understand that things come down to life level slowly by slowly in process of centuries. So Auroville is just a tiny beginning of getting a hook into the future. To answer your question about the roadmap, whether we have the roadmap to realize those things, I would say if we had the roadmap, we would not be here at where we are, just 2,000 people after 42 years. I am remembering what Peter said yesterday, one particular phase, that for India's urban development, there requires a tremendous vision and leadership. I would say the same thing for Auroville, that for Auroville, we have to realize this Auroville vision in every aspect. We need tremendous vision and leadership, and we need that now, we still, and I hope you will be able to contribute to that. Thank you.
Can I say something? When you started talking about waste, it immediately got me to this issue of scale, which I think is, for me, is really fundamental, in both in terms of India's direction, in terms of what you're doing and what the rest of the world is doing. And it occurs to me to say that moving to what I would say a materialistic lifestyle of using more artificial materials has led to the need to operate at a much bigger scale. That actually all of those waste materials and manufacturing and so on means that in order to live sustainably, you have to move to a larger scale. If you take an existing city, you have to retrofit it at quite a large scale to get the efficiency in terms of waste management and water and management. And we're talking, we've done enough now to know that for a Western lifestyle is around 200,000 people, we think, is the scale at which you have to put in place local systems that can close loops. Obviously, from where you're starting, you're looking at examining, I think, a sort of new way of thinking where you could operate at a much smaller scale and make it sustainable. But the tension seems to me between the materialistic society out there and the mobile phones and the televisions and all that stuff that seems to require a larger scale in order to close the loops again, and where you're going and how, you know, how the two match. And that, I guess, is a big issue for India, really, in terms of, you know, what scale does India decide to operate at, and how does closed-loop systems, even for televisions and mobile phones, make a difference to that as new ideas come forward?
Okay, I'm going to go to the very profane level. Okay. You see, there is the whole concept of Auroville with its spiritual dimension, and certain givens from the mother on the mandate of the project, what the project has been created for, what are its aims, goals. The methodology is very wide. At the same time, she looked at it as being played out in an urban context, not something that's on a community level or, you know, on any of these ashram agrarian society level. She looked at it as something that had to happen in an urban context. And for me, it was always very peculiar because, in a way, humanity is moving to more and more urbanization in terms of the population dynamics. At the same time, there was no real concrete proposal on the social capital, how that would play out to reach this very well-defined urban context that she approved of through her architect. We are now in a situation after 42 years where a generation and a half has lived here with a very diverse population. A lot of activities have taken birth here, people working out their creativity, and you are in a situation where there's a governance pattern which is very grassroots level that happened in the 70s and 80s, given the political crisis that we went through, that has over time created a methodology and a network of self-governance, which has a conflict with the very structured outcome of the urban project that is seen by a certain section of the population. So we are using a social capital which is very resource rich on a micro level, and at the same time we are talking about going towards a physical manifestation, actually a very form-oriented urban development that would represent the diversity of the population here that has made a personal choice. And it's not like any other city where you're pulled because of the economic input or the kind of capital you get or the educational facilities or whatever. Here you make a very definite choice that you're going to come and live here because you want, actually, to play out a different life, you know. So how do you relate then to the fact that you're going to get this as a finished outcome, and there's no time scale. In the minds of people, the finished outcome is tomorrow, if possible yesterday. But at the same time, we all live life which has a time in a time scale, where things are done as and when, you know, it's fertile to do it. So the clash between the present being sacrificed for a glorious future has always held us back in being able to assimilate on a regional level the challenges that we are facing today and yesterday. That means the growth of the villages around, the kind of tourism that we're generating with our very curious lifestyle that everybody wants to come and have a look at. We're very form-oriented in our development and building envelopes that pulls in even more tourists. And the kind of activities we do in a very scattered geographical landholding pattern that makes any kind of mass transportation coming together, urban nodes, services being provided, a very challenging aspect of life. And an economic system that does not allow you to create livelihood that allows people to develop and live and survive here. So there are so many contradictions in the present day-to-day reality system that we've come up with to the larger term goals. And this manifests in so many conflicts on many levels. It's not just in the development of the city, on interpersonal level, even in neighborhoods, because people interpret things on completely different time scales.
This. Well, first, hello.
Am I on here?
Hello? So, and thank you for that very interesting and very informing description of what's going on. And I did have that question in mind. I was wondering, because I do work with a lot of communities around transformation. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's the communities that really want to go somewhere that would tend to hire somebody like me or Peter, and they want to demonstrate something. And Oroville, yes, it's unique and special. I'm very well aware of that, but not in the sense that you care for your community and you're worried about the future and the pace of change is happening too quick and you can't keep up with things and that people are arguing over which direction is the right one to go. This is a common situation all over, and people do love their cities and towns. I think, Mike, I have a kind of a comment question in response. I do recognize that the ingredients here are different. There's a lot more thought gone into vision and a lot more discussion of it. And like you say, there's this micro-rich social capital, but I understand it, a huge number of very resourceful people bringing very distinct and different disciplines and formal training and experience and cultural background, and wow, what a mix, and where can that go? The problem that I often encounter, and I don't know if it's relevant here, you tell me. The problem I see all over is too much focus on discussion and decision-making and too little on design. And I'll try and make it, I'll try and clarify the difference as I see it. So I think, in fact, even in large cities, huge amounts of effort to bring people into halls to discuss things. The real developers, builders, and money men, they never come to those discussions, I can tell you that. But lots of people do, and they put a lot of time into it, and they're so frustrated because they seem to be going in circles. And often the choices they're given are fancy presentations by consultants or residents who have put a lot of effort into something, but it's a two-dimensional future they're looking at, and it's artificial choices, and it doesn't actually engage people or let them own. And those who walk in with agendas or a lot of preconceptions hold to them, and eventually define themselves in terms of their opposition to what's put forward. And I understand that process, and I don't like it. And what I found works much, much better is to focus on the concept of design. And like, just give me a second here, because I'm hoping I have something maybe to contribute to what no doubt is a fractious issue of which, what is the roadmap? I find that design is not well understood because it's actually a creative process that brings experts together with knowledge and together with techniques, games, and workshops, and representations, and illustrations, and models, and computer simulations. So you've got these creative techniques, you've got some experts, and you've got loads of those, and you've got the knowledge, which is everybody else here, you know, and it's learning to integrate that design triangle well. And I don't think we've been doing it well because our formal training and background, honestly, is about I'm the design expert, even if I'm equal in a community that's pretty horizontal and that shares common values, it's still my expertise, I'm the designer. Getting around that concept and realizing that when it comes to communities, roads, buildings, and cities, the capacity of everybody to design is there, and it's phenomenal. And it can be brought out well, and the role of designers is to be the hands, sometimes, to help the others express their ideas in a way that can be communicated easily to everybody else. And then to iteratively do that, each day it's on the wall and you go round and round, and after 3 or 4 days, what a group like we've got here in this room can do, if the focus is on design and not decision-making, is absolutely phenomenal. And when you've been through that process, the naysayers and the groups that hated each other to come in the door, everybody's so excited by the product, the decision's made. You don't have to spend much time on the decision making. It really is effective. Now, it's not just a group like this, because you can't actually involve everybody. But in a process I'm finding, and there's two things, and I'll finish with those. The process I'm finding is evolving as we go from community to community. One technique is you have an outer table, and they come in each day when there's a design issue. Is it a new road, or what's the downtown going to look like? What do we do with densities, or how do we deal with the green space and residents and so forth? You bring in an outer table of opinion leaders and decision makers who wouldn't have the time or interest to put all the energy into it. But they're there for an hour or two each day. Sometimes it's hard to get rid of them once you get them in there. But you bring them around and introduce them to what's going on. Then you get their feedback. And then by the third day, they're rolling up their sleeves and joining in. You engage a much larger group, but not in a way that interrupts the small teams from really achieving something. Introduce an element of competition. It's not about coming up with the final and consensus. Two or three results. The more different, the better, because in the end, you take the best from each. It's a natural process, and so it helps. And I think that that exercise, and the second thing I'll say is that for the designers here, you know this has been done many times on buildings. It hasn't been done that much at the scale of the Oroville site, but that's the scale I work at. And at that scale, it's a little more abstract, a little more two-dimensional, more engineering and infrastructure and transportation, but it can be done. It can be done very effectively. It just takes a couple of little workshops in advance to warm up, and because there's so much more information. Find ways to express the ideas better using computers and the younger people who are so much more graphic now. And you can design the whole site of Oroville like it was just one big room. And that can be your roadmap, and then it gets refreshed a couple of years later. And it can provide so much more structure and ease to the day-to-day decision-making. And I'm thinking that perhaps what I've learned from working with other communities can be applied here in terms of technique. That's or maybe you're already doing it, and that's my question. I am not well informed. So.
What you just proposed, when but when there is my fear that the outcome will be different than my favorite solution, and I don't have a control to the outcome, and then mother wanted to have a certain impact, that a very simple life, and if then the control goes to the community, and many of the community members want to have a big flat, or they want to have no circular ring road, they want to maybe something more sustainable. What can I do?
But that's the point, I guess, of design. others may have an answer to that, but the first answer everyone comes up is compromise. But design isn't about compromise at all. It's a way of meeting your needs and there's others' needs at the same time. That's creative solutions. There may be no creative solution, but I'm surprised if there isn't. Put yourself in a room with 3 days in a positive frame of mind. Get rid of those little gremlins that sit there and say, they'll never come around, they won't understand me, they won't listen. Get rid of those guys for 3 days with all of us in a room working. We'll come up with a creative design solution that achieves both at the same time. That's my proposal.
Can I suggest that maybe there is an intermediate step? Because my experience is that you have to be very clear about your performance objectives and share those and agree those before you get into what you're describing, which is the design. And with all the work we're doing, we find it's really effective to have a three-day workshop to agree social, environmental, and economic objectives for the direction of travel. And I think, in a sense, this is a very special community because you have a sense of travel that you've been provided with. But I feel part of the problem here is that you haven't got that intermediate layer of understanding of the social, environmental, and economic direction, which fits with with the mother's overall spiritual requirements. And I think you need to sort that out first before you can get into the design, because I think if you don't, then I think your fears and worries will still remain.
I'd like to add on that. Yeah, I'd like to add on that, like, because we were speaking about the conference of the designer limiting the design from happening, from collaboration and everything. I think in that direction, my little knowledge makes me happy that Orville is going in a positive direction, in the sense, like, what I came to know first was, like, it was so concentrated with visions of a lot of people. So I think that to synchronize all these visions of a lot of people coming from a lot of backgrounds, from a lot of upbringing, that needs some sort of time and sublimation for all these visions to come and concentrate into a single goal. And I think that's happening. And the delay that is happening is only in the agreement between the different kinds of perspectives different people have. And I think it's a complex exercise of marrying the spiritual aspect to material reality. It can take this much time for an experiment of 40 years, maybe much more, because it's including such a lot of vision. And I was especially happy when I was hearing about the speaker from Arup telling about he was drawing the planning guidelines from the cultural and subtle aspects of the context. And I think in Orville, what they are trying to do is even deeper. What I feel is even deeper from the spiritual or even the intangible aspects, so higher than trying to make material realities out of that. And I think that experiment is going perfectly well, and it can take that time.
You wanted to say something?
I mean, a few things. One is to speak to what Sebastian said, and that is that it's our collective experience here, and there are many people who work together in the room, and all of you have been doing this for 40 years, that this is absolutely possible. That you can take a whole range of apparently contradictory things, people who come from different places, and you can take a set of very contradictory conditions, people who come from very different places, and through a process of design, you can actually go beyond all of that. And this is a very tangible thing. We've done this many, many times. That's one of the questions I have. What I hear, there are two things that I'll try and speak to here. The first thing that Sebastian spoke to was the difficulty of being able to construct a future through everyday life, through Satprem's work in very pragmatic ways to other people in green work and other such thing. So we're constructing something new together. We're building from below, from the material, from a whole range of conditions. I think the tension in the room is the secret that we are not talking about, and that is the galaxy. I'm speaking directly to that question because that's, I guess, what my role is here. And I think the real challenge is that there are at least two ways of dealing with this. One is the constructivist vision, that you build from below, and in constructing you change and enable transformation. And then there's also what one would call the essentialist way of looking at things. In Indian long philosophical traditions, there are two ways of approaching knowledge. One is the essentialist way, where knowledge exists and it manifests itself. And there's also the constructed way. We call it, you know, the left and the right, where knowledge is created from below. So I think the elephant in the room that we're not talking about is how do you actually bring those two together? They're not contradictory. And that's exactly the core experiment that you're testing here in Auroville, which has not been done in this land for many thousands of years. We lost this maybe 2,500 years ago when there was that integration. So I think we need to speak to your deepest contradiction here. And I'm speaking to that because I asked precisely this question maybe 2 years ago. Roger was in this room and I asked him, I said, where did this galaxy come from? First question. Second question, I said, which galaxy is this? And it was a very concrete question, because what I did was, to try and make it concrete, was I said, look, I took a series of images that came from the Hubble Space Telescope, just to make it very, very concrete. And I said, look, which galaxy is it? There's so many different galactic forms we can see, you know, in the universe, because there are more galaxies than human beings that have ever existed. The form of galaxies they're as rich as each one of us are, and we know biologically each one of them throughout the history of the species have actually been unique. So which galaxy is it that we're looking at? Because I think what we have got trapped in here is a literalist interpretation of something that is much deeper than what we're getting through. And, you know, Roger sort of represented that integration. And I still remember, and you know, I mean, Jacqueline was sitting next to him at one side and partially translated, because he was when he answered that question, he spoke very softly in French. And it confounded me for a while, and his answer was very interesting. I expected him to say something very concrete or said this. He said, look, the only way that you can know is by letting, and he's speaking for himself, is to let the psychic lead. And that is how the integration happens. And I think, let the psychic, and you know, it stopped me, and it stopped me for many days actually at one level. And I think that is what we have not enabled to happen in this place. And it's not only the psychic being of each person in the room and the collective consciousness of Auroville, etc. It's also the connection with India. And this is what I was talking to yesterday. India is changing very, very dramatically. This moment has come before. I can assure you that. Most of us know this. And if you want to look for evidence, go to the Metropolitan Museum in New York and go to the Amarna Galleries. And those of you who know what I'm talking about know that the evidence is there. It's very tangible. It's very concrete. You are about to walk through a window that is really this thin. And I think it is that connection that you have to make. If you do not make that connection, this moment will pass.